Hi there, everybody. Welcome back to the Bumblecast. I am your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King. And joining me, as always, is my billionaire philanthropist playboy buddy, Iron Kyle.
I wish.
Which part? The iron, the playboy, the philanthropist?
The
all of the above?
Sure, why not? I'd rather be Falcon, to be honest, though. Come on.
Really?
Yeah.
The everyman with a flight bag? Okay.
That dude's cool, man.
Oh, he is. He is. He is. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. This episode is dedicated to the latest blockbuster superhero film that everybody's talking about, Captain America 3 Civil War. Which, if you haven't seen it yet, I can understand, because it's still fairly new. So this episode is going to be chock full of spoilers. If you have not seen it yet, skip ahead to the Q&A. Seriously, don't listen to this podcast yet, because we're going to be talking about it full tilt, and it's one of those really good movies that you need to just see for yourself.
Yeah. do not listen to us talk about it. Go see it. Go.
Or if you don't care about spoilers, or if you have seen it, here we go.
Yeah.
Now, we've discussed this in the past. This has come up a few times in previous podcasts, and I was worried going in that it would have too big of a cast, that it would just become unwieldy because you have too many characters. You're introducing Spider-Man again, you're introducing Black Panther, you're introducing a new villain, and you're doing the Civil War storyline, and you're continuing Winter Soldier. How can you do that all in one film? And they did it.
Yeah, pretty much. they nailed it.
I mean, it's not even a debate over whether or not they did a good job. They did it.
Yeah.
They just did it. It's good. It's perfect. It's not perfect, but it's like 99.9% perfect.
Yeah. I mean, you could nitpick a few criticisms here and there, but hey, overall, it was nearly flawless in its execution.
And it was sad.
Yeah.
Like, I honestly got choked up more than once watching the film, and this was before, you know, the best friends were punching each other in the face.
Yeah, it was, it had all of the emotion that Batman v Superman lacked.
We're going to get to that discussion.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the film by its own merits first.
Okay.
Because when we get into comparing the two films and tearing Batman and Superman apart again.
Yeah.
It's going to be pretty sad.
I mean, that comparison is unfortunately kind of inevitable, but.
It is.
I think it needs to be made.
It is. But we'll get to that in just a minute. So, did you have a key moment that you loved the most about the film?
Man. If I could pick just one? Man.
Maybe a top three? This is the third Captain America film, so let's make it three.
I think the top moment for me is definitely the airport fight. I made fun of that a little bit just based on the trailers. Just because I was kind of like, thinking, oh, it's kind of sad that this movie version of Civil War is like 12 people just running at each other across a airport runway, because I was thinking in my head like the comparisons of the way that the comic book Civil War looks and just how many dozens and dozens of characters are in that.
Mm-hmm.
Even though that was not well executed at all, really.
No.
But just the look of it and comparing it to that, I'm just like, oh, it seems kind of anemic. But then in the actual movie, yeah. it was one of the greatest action scenes I think I've ever seen in a movie.
It was really tightly put together, just like all the action sequences in Winter Soldier, which had the same writers and directors.
Yeah.
I think what really sells the airport fight more than anything else, and this we'll be coming back to this point numerous times, I'm sure, is that in the comic version, you had, you know, the entire Marvel Universe beating each other's face in, but it didn't mean anything.
Right.
They were not fighting for a particular goal. They were not fighting anyone in particular. It was just, here's the big melee.
Yeah.
In the movie, all these characters have a personal stake in it. Each one has a particular goal, and you're kind of rooting for both sides. You are invested in it. They are personally invested in it, and that adds so much more to the fight, aside from the cool factor.
Yeah, that was kind of the thing. It was really difficult to, like, choose a side necessarily because of the way they both were presented.
Yep.
They were both presented in they were both presented well, and they were both presented in an understandable fashion where you could see both sides. At least I could.
That is my number one of three. The fact that they promised it would be a debate, that there would be no true hero or villain in the conflict, and they delivered.
Yeah.
You had all the characters sitting there having a mature discussion. Everyone had valid points and viewpoints. Everyone was a little bit right. Everyone was a little bit wrong. And in the end, it wasn't tied up in a neat little bow. There was no big group hug at the end. Oh, we misunderstood. Now we're all friends again. No, there's still the division.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still friends. That's what I love about it, is that it's a sad movie, but it has a lot of hope in it.
Yeah.
That ending that, you know, they are divided, but they are still together at a, in a way, by the common ideal of protecting the world. And I think that is so much deeper and more mature than a certain other film.
Yeah.
And a lot of other films in general, across the genre, across films that have come out in the past 10, 15 years, you wouldn't expect that kind of meaty, nuanced message in a Cape film. And I think that's what resonates so much.
That would be the second thing I liked, is that there was no clear-cut winner or anybody who necessarily came out on top. I mean, it kind of depends on how you interpret it, I suppose, but to me it didn't really seem like it was absolute, which is a big departure from the original Civil War, which, kind of made Iron Man out to be the big winner, and then it all got wiped away in a retcon a couple months later anyway, so whatever, it doesn't matter.
Big winner and big villain at the same time.
Right, yeah.
I guess my number two moment would be the entire funeral sequence.
Oh, yeah?
As an aside, before we get to the emotional aspect, the trailers totally pulled one over on me. Because the one shot they kept showing over and over again of War Machine getting shot out of the sky, I'm like, they wouldn't kill Rhodey.
I was legitimately scared that they were going to kill him. Especially when watching the movie. I was like, oh no, did they actually kill him?
And in one of the trailers, you see Steve carrying a casket looking heartbroken that looks like it's got the red, white, and blue on it. And I'm like, no. Rhodey was a serviceman. Cap isn't this. No. And then it turns out it was the Union Jack. And it's like, oh, you got me.
Yeah.
You totally got me. Yeah. Well played. But the whole funeral sequence, from the way Steve reacts to the text message to Sharon Carter's eulogy that uses bits and pieces of a very famous Captain America speech from the comics, to Black Widow showing up to be a shoulder to cry on, literally.
Mm-hmm.
All of that was a culmination of numerous character moments that have been built up over numerous films, and it came together in a very real, very humanistic, and really sad moment. But it's, not to go too Japanese on you, but it's a kind of beautiful sadness, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I just love the fact that they had these really human moments in a film that could have been just, special effects out the wazoo.
Yeah. I'd say my third favorite part of the movie was the way Black Widow, her character arc throughout the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Very nuanced, actually, I think. She was she was always there for Steve, and she kind of understood his position, but I think logically kind of realized that Iron Man's position was probably the one that was more likely going to prevail.
The most pragmatic, yeah.
So, but then she kind of, during the airport fight, she kind of waffled a bit and everything, so I don't know, I just really enjoyed that.
And I'm wondering if this is all going to play into the recently announced Solo film that she's finally getting.
Yeah, I hope so.
I mean, she's royally pissed off the world at this point by actively going against the sanctioned Avengers. So are we going to get a neat little cloak and dagger story of her on the run, maybe?
That would be interesting. It's probably not going to happen until, at least 2020, though, unfortunately, but...
Well, they're not going to be stopping films anytime soon, so
no.
Plenty of Tide is over.
No, but she's obviously going to be in the upcoming Avengers movies, and with the Infinity War and all that stuff. So I don't know.
I guess we'll see.
It depends on if they bump anyone out for her movie instead.
Well, Inhumans got bumped off the list, so maybe she's going to be taking that slot.
Did it completely?
As far as I know, it is off the roster.
Really? Huh.
Now, there was some speculation because, and this is with no insider knowledge, this is me going off of everybody else's speculation, because Fox owns the rights to the X-Men films, the X-Men in the comics have been kind of regulated off to the side.
Yeah.
There's been a big push where the Terrigen Mist, the origin of the Inhumans' powers, is become fatal to the mutants. The Inhumans have been pushed heavily in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and they were going to get their own movie. So everyone was kind of putting the pieces together that Inhumans were going to become the new X-Men, so to speak.
Yeah, they were going to be kind of
the same thing, in, you know, humans with special powers.
Kind of the stand-in mutants.
Right. And personally, I thought the whole Terrigen Mist killing off the X-Men was almost self-aware satire. It's like, oh, we're just going to bump off the X-Men with our Inhumans. Ha ha ha. But with Spider-Man, who is still somewhat owned by, who is it, Paramount?
Sony,
excuse me. But having come back into the hands of Marvel, there was speculation that because Inhumans got bumped, a new deal was being worked out behind the scenes to bring X-Men over.
I've heard some rumors about at least Wolverine appearing in the Marvel cinematic movies, but
right.
It's just rumors.
Said he's done with the role, but
yeah,
I'm sure when they add just another couple of zeros to that paycheck, he might change his mind.
Hey, Harrison Ford did it.
Why yeah. not? Robert Downey Jr. did it, and Chris Evans has thrown himself into the role entirely. But
yeah.
That aside, my third favorite thing out of Captain America, and this is a hard toss-up, but I think I'm going to have to go with the end-of-the-movie twists. And this is coming up neck-and-neck with Vision and Black Panther, but we'll get into their characters in a second.
Mm-hmm.
But the ending twist where, number one, Zemo wasn't trying to get his own personal army of super soldiers. As he said, why would you think I'd want five more of you running around? And then the reveal that Bucky killed the Starks. And I feel like an idiot for not picking it up sooner because they kept coming back to that scene.
Yeah.
And honestly, who would have a trunk full of super soldier serum? Nah, say that three times fast. Super soldier serum. Super soldier serum.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on it either, actually. I didn't think about it. But I'm like, yeah, I guess that makes sense. I mean, Stark, of course, would have a whole ton of super soldier serum, wouldn't he?
I mean, one thing that bugs me a little bit is that this is one of the few nitpicks I have with films. What was that camera doing there on this random highway in that day and age?
Right, right at that exact spot. Yeah.
That's... Yeah, that one seems a little convenient, but for the sake of setting everything up and executing it, I'll forgive it.
Yeah, it worked. It still worked.
But it was all set up. It all made sense. And I didn't see it coming. And I love that. It works. And I feel dumb for not picking up on it, but I would rather feel dumb than for it to not make sense. And it's like, oh, well, it's just contrived.
Yeah.
Now, those neck and neck ones. Vision, number one. I felt like in Age of Ultron, he was really shoehorned into the story. Of course, Age of Ultron had a lot of problems.
Yeah, it did.
too many characters, not enough clear motivations. Vision's power set, I didn't think, was very clearly defined in that movie. So in this film, where he has this wonderful balancing act of being the machine with a soul archetype without retreading ground that so many other characters have, you know, balancing that perfect line of he's personable and endearing, but he still has this kind of cold aloofness that a synthetic thing has.
Mm-hmm.
And showing his powers, like when he's fighting with Clint in the Avengers compound, and he goes intangible just to walk through him and then get him in a headlock. That was fantastic. It felt very natural. It felt like he had the force and the ability, and it felt like part of the character and part of the world. It didn't feel like a special effect.
Yeah, that's one of the main things about this movie. I thought the special effects, you know, they were there, but they really didn't get in the way.
Right. They felt like part of the world.
Yeah.
Now, that's what I love so much about Winter Soldier, or one of the many things I love so much about Winter Soldier,
mm-hmm.
was the way that they showed Captain America's superhuman abilities. they didn't seem too outlandish. They just seemed like someone beyond what would be normal human peak. But it's, you got to feel for the visceral physical power that he had. And they kept that in this film, you know, with him kicking the truck into the guy and that sort of stuff, outrunning things on the highway. And that got extended to these characters with much, much greater power sets, but it still felt grounded.
Yeah. That's what I think I like about these movies so much, is that they still feel believable and realistic, even though all of these people have fantastical superpowers that will never exist in reality. It's still believable. It's really cool like that.
And with Black Panther, it's the Marvel way of making me like their stuff.
Uh-huh.
Like when Iron Man was announced, I'm like, oh, really? Iron Man? All right. I don't really know much or care for the character. All right, let's see how it goes. It's like, oh, wow, now I love Iron Man.
Uh-huh.
And then they do Captain America. And it's like, okay, sure, Mr. Patriot. All right. Well, they made me like Iron Man. Let's see how this goes. Oh, wow, I love Captain America now even more. Okay, they're doing Thor? Well, how are they even going to make that work? Oh, wait, it's cheesy, but it's delightful and endearing. Okay, I'm on board.
Yeah.
So when they said, we're going to introduce Black Panther now, it's like, you know what? I don't know a ton about the character, but sure, you have won me over at this point. Let's see how he is. And he's cool. He's charismatic. He's an absolute badass. And he has one of the best and concise personal arcs in the film.
Yeah.
To go from, you know, happy diplomat to king on a revenge streak. And then he sees the error of his ways and sees what revenge does to people. And doesn't fall into the same trap. It's like, you were freaking awesome. I am really hyped for your film. Bring it on.
I like how they managed to fit his entire origin story into this movie where there's a whole ton of other stuff happening too. And it works.
It didn't feel tacked on. No. It didn't feel like a diversion. It was just part of the story.
Yeah. It made a lot of sense. And I was kind of like you. I went into this movie not knowing a whole lot about Black Panther, other than I knew he existed, and I kind of knew sort of his origin as a Wakandan king, but other than that, I didn't really know anything about him, and I came out of it like definitely enjoying his character and really looking forward to a solo movie.
So, yeah, it's I really want to find something to dissect, something to criticize that, you know, it isn't just absolute fanboying.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think this is fanboying because I'm not enjoying it because it's a Marvel film. Right. I certainly enjoy the characters and the universe they've built, and a lot of the films have had lots of things you can pick apart. And I'm sure that, you know, on the second, third, and maybe 12th viewing, I'll find ways to, you know, find problems here and there. Like, all right, for one, I'll give this one to the people who were a bit angry. Helmut Zemo is not the comic character, not remotely.
No.
He's not a Hydra agent. He's not a Baron. He's not even from the right country. He's just a guy with the same name.
And I keep thinking of him even as Baron Zemo, even though I know he's not a Baron. But I keep thinking that just because that's like ingrained into my head is that's his name. But exactly. He's not Baron Zemo, no.
So fans of that character, I would understand why they're dissatisfied because it really wasn't that character.
Yeah.
Same way I can kind of understand folks being unhappy with the way the Mandarin was portrayed in Iron Man 3 because, to a degree, he was racially insensitive and didn't work with the times, but to make him a complete fraud, to make him just an actor,
yeah,
I can understand some dissatisfaction with that.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, the Zemo of the film had a very real, very personal motivation, and he's arguably the single most effective villain in the entire Marvel Universe because, one, he didn't die, and two, his plan worked. So,
yeah,
there you go.
It actually worked. I feel like they could have maybe utilized him a little bit more, but I think working in the shadows kind of worked for him.
Well, he didn't need to do more.
True, you know? True.
His whole point was to unsettle things so that the Avengers imploded, and that's what he did.
That's what he did, and it worked, yeah.
Because all he really needed was the proof that Bucky killed Iron Man, and boom, he knew the rest would, you know, finish itself off.
Yeah.
But the point I was getting at
this movie, go ahead.
What I was getting at earlier, I don't think it's fanboying. I think it's an honestly solid, thoughtful film. It's character driven. It's got excellently choreographed action scenes that don't distract you with razzle dazzle. Each moment has a purpose. It's funny without being distractingly quippy. It's just, it's a really solid story. It's a great film.
Yeah. I 100% agree.
So I guess we might as well get into the comparison of one other story. And
I wanted to talk a little bit.
Yeah, go.
The introduction of Spider-Man. How he was brought into the fold. And basically, in like Tony's desperation, that's kind of what it was. It was a desperate move to go out and basically find a kid who has no horse in this race and no real business being involved in this. But to go out and find basically a teenager who just happens to have really amazing powers. And I like the way he acted in the airport fight scene, because he was just a kid.
Yep.
It was perfect. There was a really, really good moment between him and Captain America during the fight, which, you know, this is a big battle, and there's really this nice character moment between the two of them in the middle of a giant battle. It's like,
I mean, that's part of what was so great about the airport fight too, was that they weren't trying to kill one another like they were in the comic. It was, we are at odds, and what would normally be, you know, a scuffle in the parking lot between normal people is blowing up planes because they're, what's the term they use?
Yeah.
Enhanced individuals?
I think that was what they said, yeah. Something like that. One criticism I would have to say, once it's pretty minor, but kind of the way they just kind of, I guess, pushed Ant-Man out the door into the movie. Like,
literally.
Both, yeah, that's what literally happens. But they also kind of just, you know, just shove him in there just so he can be there, really. But he also gets two really good moments during the airport fight. So I'm forgiving. I can forgive that.
Well, did you see his film?
Yes, I did.
Did you see the after-credits scene?
What's that?
Did you see the after-credits scene?
I'm sure I did, but I don't remember it off the top of my head.
Because the after-credit scene is the one that they show in the film with Steve and Sam talking, and he says, we're going to need more folks, and Sam says, I know a guy.
Okay, yeah. That's right. Okay. It was that scene.
So they did have a little bit of setup.
Yeah.
And he did still feel very much like the odd man out in that whole thing.
Yeah, him and Spider-Man a little bit. They were just kind of, hey, we're third parties that happen to be here. Hi. Hawkeye was a little bit of that, too, but he had previous setup as part of the Avengers, so.
Right. I love how they took elements from the comic, kind of like keynotes, and made them work better in the film. The grieving mother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she wasn't this constant sparrow on Tony's shoulder with varying characterization. She was someone who spoke to him and lit a fire under his
ass. Yeah.
You have Spider-Man getting a suit from Tony. It's not the Iron Spidey suit, but he went from a hoodie and goggles to a full-on superhero suit, so it's the same general idea.
It makes a lot of sense, yeah.
You have the heroes incarcerated in a horrible prison setting, but instead of being another dimension where there's no hope of ever escaping and, you know, being hunted down by S.H.I.E.L.D. and yada yada, it's being run by General Thunderbolt Ross, or excuse me, Secretary of State Ross, which is even more terrifying.
Right, yeah.
And instead of Tony being a mustache-twirling villain who puts them there, he is someone who tried to do the best for them, knew there would be repercussions, but didn't realize it would be that grim, and he's not happy with it.
Yeah.
So much better! In every way!
Yes, yes. Oh, man. Oh, man. Alright, you want to get into comparing this thing to to Orphan Fight?
This was something that one key thing that Leah and I were discussing earlier today, actually, was the comparison of Black Panther's agenda to Batman's agenda. And there's a number of parallels, because T'Challa and Bruce Wayne, you know, both humans in peak physical condition, both wealthy, both handsome, both charismatic, both with super suits that allowed them to do things that no normal man could do. And both of them are on a murderous I guess, revenge streak, if we really want to fudge it a bit.
Yeah.
Revenge for the human race versus revenge for the father. But here was the key difference, and I think Leah phrased it rather well, is that in Batman v Superman, Bruce has had this grudge for however long it was since Man of Steel. What did they say? 1 year? 2 years?
I think it was a year. Okay. Somewhere around there.
So for a year now, he has been plotting and fuming and strategizing and branding people and going to extremes until he finally lays out this elaborate trap to slowly incapacitate Superman and drag him to a pit where he can stab him. That's creepy. That's premeditated murder, and it's unsettling. T'Challa, on the other hand, has what seems to be all the evidence in the world that this known super assassin blew up his father, and he's out to get him. It's been 2 days, maybe. That's not a lot of time to get over the whole, you murdered my father, I am angry, spike. And then in Batman Superman, the issue is resolved, in quotation marks, by saying Martha. Earlier in the film, and we covered this in the previous podcast, it's made clear that Bruce doesn't care that Superman has any kind of human traits, or if he even has a family, he thinks he's dangerous and wants to kill him.
Yeah.
It's the whole Martha thing that makes him flip out and backtrack. There's no character growth. There's no greater understanding. He just does a 180. He doesn't care that Superman has a mother. He cares that Superman has a mother because she shares the same name. That's it. That is the breadth, the depth of it all. T'Challa hears what's going on, learns the truth, realizes he's wrong, and through introspection and observation of these men that he's been fighting beside and seeing how revenge is tearing them apart, takes it upon himself to get over the very difficult hurdle of letting go of that anger. And not only forgives Bucky, but stops the real murderer from killing himself and brings him to justice.
Yeah.
There is an ocean between these two.
Yeah.
One is deep and interesting and character driven and very respectable.
And the other one is Batman. Maybe. Ostensibly Batman.
Batman v Superman is the kind of superhero fight movie that you dread. You know, there were good parts at the beginning, but then as soon as it got to the title fight, it didn't feel like the rest of the movie mattered. This is what you came for, the big slappy, explodey, whatever, with no heart to it. And part of that is because they didn't, you know, build it up in the same Marvel way. And I'm not saying that the DC Cinematic Universe had to do it the same way, because at this point, they're way behind in that race.
Right, yeah.
But there was no concentrated buildup. They focused so much on Bruce's agenda and Clark's agenda that never the twain shall meet. The most interaction they had before the knockdown fight was Batman bouncing his car off Superman's ankle in that hilarious scene.
Yeah.
And Superman ignoring the flaming truck full of kryptonite to, you know, glare and scold at Batman before flying off.
And then they met at that dinner party, too, but that's not... As in their secret identities, but so it was like,
right? They didn't, yeah, it was two ships passing in the night. It didn't
pretty
really
much, yeah, it didn't
mean anything,
right?
Civil War is the culmination of all these different stories and films and characters in a meaningful way. I mean, Tony going full on bloodlust against Bucky makes sense. He has been falling apart since the Avengers. Iron Man 3 focused on the fact that he is not dealing with things well. Age of Ultron shows that he's not learning his lesson and that he's getting desperate to make things right.
And that's also where we see a lot of the conflict between Steve and between Captain America and Iron Man. That's where sort of that conflict starts to really bubble over is in that movie.
And then you see him reaching that tipping point when Rhodey hits the ground and he's okay, he's alive. But when Falcon tries to apologize, he gets shot almost point blank.
Yeah.
Because Tony isn't holding back anymore. He can't. He is a bundle of raw nerves, and he's about to snap. And then you show him Bucky methodically and horribly killing his parents. Something that has traumatized him for a long time. No, that's it. And it makes sense that he goes too far. And you can't really blame him because all through Civil War, he's been trying his best to do what he thinks is right to save his friends. And now, after all this, he's repaid with finding out that the one thing that's been causing so much trouble, Cap's good old buddy Bucky, is the reason his parents died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, this movie. And I know I've said that before, but man.
And the peril, it all sets itself up in meaningful ways. You have a logical progression of events from Bucky being set up to a global manhunt for him, which leads everyone to him. And then you have Zemo messing all that up, which leads to Captain America backed into a corner, has to go against the law, which leads Tony to have to come in to get him so that nobody else will go after him, which gets even worse, which all culminates in Siberia. It all falls into place. Superman blew up some buildings by accident that made Bruce mad. And then Lex Luthor started sending very crisply written letters in red ink to mess with people so that maybe Batman would try to kill Superman. And then he kidnaps Martha Kent that he found out somehow to make Superman try to kill Batman, even though Batman was going to try to kill Superman. And no matter which way that worked, he was also going to make Doomsday because reasons. But Wonder Woman was cool.
Yes, yes, yes.
So
that was about it.
I don't know. It's like looking at someone who wants to tell a deep and exciting story who doesn't know what they're doing, and then people who know what they're doing. And that's, you know, a very broad and demeaning way of saying it, but just comparing the two, Batman v Superman is such a weak story with such weak characterization, and then you compare it to Civil War, which is so much more complex that it should have fallen apart.
Yeah, it really should have. It really shouldn't have worked at all.
It shouldn't be as solid as it is, but it does. It works. So there's no excuse, really, to not reach that bar.
As I was watching it, I actually had an active moment where I thought, man, I really care about how things are going right now. And I was like, I didn't have that thought at all watching Batman v Superman. It was kind of funny. So, do we have anything else to add on to this one?
I like the Crossbones showed up the way he did. Kind of sad he's dead, but that seems to be par for the course for most Marvel villains, unless you're Loki.
True, true. I really did kind of... I really felt bad for Wanda and her reaction to that when that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of surprised. I was like, wow. The actress is Elizabeth Olsen, and the way she just looked absolutely horrified at what she had accidentally done, I was like, wow, that's kind of believable. Are you sure you're not related to the Olsen twins? Are you sure you are related to the Olsen twins? Because I can't believe that.
And I like that accident, I guess, for lack of a better incident,
mm-hmm.
is also believable.
Yeah. You know,
it's not that they made some stupid error. It was that a dude was about to explode. She has somewhat unwieldy powers. And in an effort to get the guy out of there so that he didn't blow up everyone on the ground, it blew up the closest building. And, oh, God, she didn't mean for that to happen. You could see her trying to contain the explosion, but she couldn't. So,
yeah,
it wasn't her fault, but it was her fault. And that is kind of the theme of the whole film, is it's both right and wrong. And there is no clear-cut, simple answer. And it's just so refreshing.
Yeah, it's really
and
nice.
And sad.
Yeah.
Because no matter what she did, she would have been in the wrong. If she hadn't tried to stop him, everyone on the ground would have been blown up. If she did try to stop him, people still got hurt. You can't win. And that's what's so sad about the film.
Yeah. Yep. I agree.
And it's... I guess with the first Avengers film, that too had, you know, this huge cap, huge for the time, with these huge stakes, and it came together really well, and it got me really excited for the future of the Marvel Universe, because you had the team together now, you had all these avenues open up, you had Thanos be one of the coolest villains without saying a single word, and then Age of Ultron kind of neutered that excitement, because it just didn't click like the first one did.
Mm-hmm.
The characterization was not clear. The motivations were sloppy. The film itself wasn't as cohesive. I recently rewatched it to see, you know, was it really as bad as I remember? And it's not bad. It's just mediocre. It's not a good, solid story.
Yeah, my expectations were probably a little high for that one when I went in to watch it. So
I'm sorry.
Well, I wasn't completely disappointed. I was just kind of, eh. It was good, but yeah, it was pretty underwhelming. This more than makes up for it.
Oh, this is, to me, this is kind of like Avengers 2 do-over. We're sorry. Here it is done right.
Yeah, yeah.
And I am excited for the Marvel Universe. I can't wait to see Spider-Man Homecoming. I can't wait to see Black Panther. I can't wait to see Johansson.
Black Widow.
Yeah, her. In her own movie. I can't wait to see, you know, are they going to do Secret Avengers out of this? Are they going to...
We have Doctor Strange coming up.
We got Doctor Strange coming out. And how is this all going to culminate with Infinity War down the road? It's just, there's so many things coming together at once, and I'm excited again. And that is exactly what you want for this kind of franchise. You yeah. want people to be waiting for the next movie while being pleased with the current one.
Yeah, this has got me really excited for the future again.
And to make you even happier, unless you already knew this, but the same writing-directing team for Winter Soldier and this are doing Infinity War.
Yes. So, and there's going to be like dozens and dozens of characters in that one. So
I think the latest count was 67.
Yeah, something insane like that. Yeah.
And since they do such a good job of having the characters act in a grounded sense, I cannot wait for what will undoubtedly be in there, which is the Captain America confronts Thanos scene.
Yeah.
Which, not to spoil folks who haven't read the comics, but there is a scene where Captain America is alone up against Thanos, and Thanos is at a level far, far beyond this little man.
Yes.
And it's not going to go well for Steve, and I really look forward to that horrible, heartbreaking moment in the film. I'm a sick individual.
You know what? It's fine.
It's that beautiful sadness thing. It's like, oh, this is going to tear my heart out. Can't wait for it to happen.
Yeah.
And
it's like when Rhodey went splat. I was just like, no! I knew it was coming, but still, no!
Everyone in the audience was holding their breath, and as soon as Friday said, I detect a heartbeat, Ollie and I both went, oh, good.
Yeah, yeah.
We can look forward to the rest of the film now.
Yeah, which it's really funny because, you know, in Batman v Superman, going back to that real quick, Superman outright dies. Who cares?
It had no impact whatsoever.
No, no. But Rhodey almost dies and it's like, no!
Well, they put, you know, Spider-Man through a bunch of crates and he's lying there and it's like, oh, no. Get up, buddy. Okay, he's good.
Yeah. Even then, I was like, oh, boy, man, this is serious.
So, yeah, it's just a fantastic film. Lots of little shout-outs to various comic book aspects. The fact that Red Wing is a drone instead of a stupid hawk. It's fantastic.
Man, I love Falcon. He really has come to his own. I really would like to see a Falcon solo movie. I'm just throwing that out there. That'd be nice.
At this rate, you would almost want to see all of them get a solo movie at this point.
I think so. I would love to see that.
And rumor has it that the next film up, aside from Doctor Strange, the Thor 3.
Yeah.
Rumor has it that it's going to be a little bit of Ragnarok, but also a bit of the Planet Hulk storyline.
Yeah, it's going to answer where Hulk and Thor are during this movie, I think. That's what I've heard.
Thor and Hulk buddying it up, kicking all sorts of ass in Asgard.
I can't wait.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, I can't wait.
So, are we done here? Should we move on to some Q&A? Because otherwise, we're just going to keep talking about this movie for another hour.
You could talk about it for forever. But yeah. Let's go ahead and move into some Q&A.
Just as a friendly reminder, if you would like to ask a question to me or Kyle or to both of us, there are three avenues. You can do it through the Patreon Message Center at patreon.com/bumblecast. You can do it through email, bumblecast@yahoo.com, or on Twitter, directed to me or Kyle with the hashtag bumblecast.
All right, let's get into some Patreon priority Q&A. We've got one here from Connell T.
Good old Connell T. Let's see if we can actually answer his question this time.
All right. He says, it's awesome seeing all these egg bosses have fleshed out personalities and styles to their character, but if you could think of any voice actors and actresses who would be the tip-top perfect voice for the 11 Stooges, who would they be? We get a lot of voice actor questions on this show.
Yeah, we do. And I always feel bad because I can never remember the names of all these great voice actors.
I know. I can't remember any of them either. Some of them I don't even know. Like, I can think of maybe characters they've done, but I can't think of their names.
One that immediately springs to mind would be Nephthys. 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 Why did I pick a character that's unpronounceable? I would imagine her voice actress would be the same one who did Damona from Gargoyles.
Ah, yes. I don't know who did that voice, but I could definitely hear that.
And let's pull from Gargoyles. What other good voice actors could we get from that? Let's put Keith David on Axel, just for that great, deep, rumbly, commanding voice. Well, let's put Xanatos' voice actor, whose name I should remember, big character in Star Trek. He was actually there at Toronto Comic Con. Can't remember his name. But we'll give him to Maul. That smooth, don't really care, but I have a great understanding of things and you don't even know it.
Jonathan Frakes. That's
there we go. Thank you.
That's the one. I had to look it up too. I couldn't think of it either.
A pitfall I would like to avoid is with Thunderbolt. She is a tiny squeaky thing, but I wouldn't want to make her a completely joke voice. So not quite like Alvin and the Chipmunks, but someone that the whole point of Thunderbolt is she's supposed to be absolutely adorable, squishable, floofy floof that is an electrical ball of murder. So a voice that would be both kind of cute, but able to be threatening at the same time. So maybe Tara Strong does Bubbles out of Powerpuff Girls, right?
Yeah.
All right, so maybe kind of a Bubbles voice Tara Strong, maybe.
Yeah, I could see that, something like that.
Okay, maybe not for Axel. Maybe Ocklet should go to Keith David. Because that deep, rumbling, threatening voice.
Yeah, you need that threatening voice.
No. Okay. Keith David gets to go to Axel, but then, what's his name? Voice actor who did Lex Luthor in the Superman series does Ocklet.
I can't remember who that was either. Crap.
But he can do the deep, resonating, utterly terrifying voice. If you saw his rendition of, what was the character's name, Crimson Skull, out of the last season of Venture Brothers?
Nope, I didn't.
Look it up. It is absolutely terrifying. It's hilarious because he's this very cuddly, reasonable fellow until he gets into the villainous monologue, and then you're going to crap your pants.
That would be Clancy Brown.
Clancy Brown. There we go.
Yeah.
There we go. Lord Hood. Let's see. Let's give him Puck's voice actor from Gargoyles, because that's the first thing that springs to mind. That kind of lively and smooth but kind of sinister, backstabby type of voice. Yeah. Of course, that voice actor is so versatile, he could do probably anything. Let's see. Clove is hard to nail down because she has she's not as bombastic as the others. She's, you know, more of a character, less of a trope.
Yeah.
But while I'm being uninventive, let's give her Fox's voice actress, from Gargoyles. Or maybe Elisa's. Elisa had better range. Yeah, maybe we'll do that. Because, you know, I'm casting these people as we do this. And I know exactly what's going to happen.
Of course.
Conquering Storm. Who was Azula's voice actress?
Azula was Grey Delisle. And yeah, that was about who I was about to suggest, actually.
Because she definitely has the menace and the characterization. Just, you know, dial down the malevolence. Focus it a bit.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
Azula does Ozai type of thing.
She's played a few characters that have been like I believe.
And let's see, that leaves us with Abyss and the Battle Cuckoo. Abyss, I don't know, someone who could be playful while being very dry in their delivery. Youthful as well. I'm sure there's somebody, but I can't immediately think of it off the top of my head. And Battle Cuckoo, you would need someone who could be regal but ridiculous at the same time. Someone who could really find this perfect balance between over-the-top grandstanding while still being menacing. Someone that can, you know, laugh and go, "Hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo," but also deliver the line, "Get up, son. It's time for school."
I can't think of anybody, but yeah.
I mean, Tracy, oh, that line. That whole sequence. Amazing. Amazing. The bar has been set, and hopefully I will reach it during Eggman's Dozen. We'll see. So that's, you know, a kind of fumbly list. There are definitely room for alternative answers, but those are the first few people that I can kind of think of, I guess. If that's what we had to go with right now, I think that would they'd do an excellent job.
Yeah, that sounds like a great cast. I would watch the heck out of that. All right, let's get into some normal Q&A, shall we?
Let's do that.
Q&A from the normies out there. Just kidding, we love you all. Sonic Blue Ranger has a question for you, Ian. Actually, I guess I can answer this one too, but I'll probably agree with you. Hypothetically, do you think a red versus blue comic could work? And would you write it if it existed?
I'll answer that last part first. Heck yes. I would love to work with the Brewster team.
I would write it, and I don't even write comics.
I think it could work. Because a lot of Red versus Blue, at least especially the early seasons, worked on very static camera placement and very, very minimal animation.
Yeah.
They've gone far beyond that in recent seasons, of course. But I think the main draw of Red versus Blue are the character voices, which are well established in everyone's mind now.
Yeah.
And the very witty, dry humor and the running gags. So if you were to do a comic at this point, I think it would work because you would have in some ways more freedom of motion since you're not restricted to what the game assets have, and you wouldn't be able to match quite the same crazy over-the-top visuals that they were able to do, especially under Monty Ohm. May he rest in peace. He was taken far too soon.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it would work as a nice middle ground between the two. You would just have to make sure that you capture the same spirit of the characters. And boy, howdy, would I love to write that, you know, of course, with their oversight.
Oh, yeah.
I would even fly to Texas to do this book. So, you know, because Rooster Teeth listens to this, shoot me an email. We can do business.
Yes. Here's hoping. Maybe they do.
I tell you, how about this? If somebody listening to this manages to put me in contact with Rooster Teeth and actually makes this happen, I will send out the code phrase, "Is that a spider?" to let them know that this actually went through.
You'll write that in the book?
No, I'll tweet it.
Oh, you'll tweet it. Oh, you'll tweet it. Okay, you'll tweet it. Okay. I thought you meant you put that in the book. I'd be like, oh, well,
I will touch on every single running gag if I can find the right way to do it.
All right. I'll talk to my people. I don't actually have any people. But
you have more people than you think.
I think I do, but still. Anyway, we've got one from @Grilliz coming up here. Dear Ian, how much cream cheese does Rotor consume on a daily basis, and does Charmy want in on that?
Oh, Lord.
I don't even know where this comes from.
No, it's Grilliz. I kind of know where this is coming from. Okay. I would say at least a large tub a day. I mean, he works it off in the gym. He's got to stay, you know, buff. But,
right. Man,
does he love himself some cream cheese. You do not want to hear the story about how Charmy tried to steal one, though. And he's not on speaking terms with the Chaotix after that one. It got bad.
You never steal a man's cream cheese.
There's a nation that no longer exists on the map because of that. Just
yeah.
No, that, oh, oh, tragic.
You want to talk about Civil War.
Oh!
Oh, man.
It hurt. It's still, the wound is still fresh. Let's move on.
Okay. Unknown Shadow 675 asks, is it possible that we'll see the continuation of Shadow's story arc from Sonic 06 in the comments? Comments one day? Are you going to continue Shadow's story arc from Sonic 06 in the comments, Ian?
I'm kind of wondering what story arc is to continue, because Shadow's arc in 06 was his confrontation with Mephiles and the debate over whether or not he would continue to protect humanity, even though he knew that in the future they would turn on him. And he answered that directly. He said he would continue to fight for them. And it's a moot point anyway, because the whole universe got reset, so he doesn't even know that that threat is looming. And regardless, his character would still fight for them. So I don't... If there's something else that they're referring to, I don't know.
Yeah, they didn't clarify that. They also said comments when I think they meant comics. So.
Yeah, well, we get the general idea.
It's all good.
But yeah, Shadow's going to continue to fight for what is technically the greater good because he enjoys fighting.
Yeah. All right, we've got one from Quantum Edge here. I think we've basically covered this before, but...
This is the 17th episode. Let's do it again.
Sure, let's do it again. I think, yeah, this has basically been covered before, but it was kind of lumped in with some other stuff. So Quantum Edge wants to know, what's your favorite novel?
Oh, dear. Singular.
Yeah.
That is a hard pick. Well, while we're on the subject of beautifully sad, or sadly beautiful, or that kind of thing, Give Treason by Orson Scott Card a try. It's one of his earlier books before he got all right-wing nut job. And it's a science fantasy story that's very, very hard to read because the main character starts off in a very bad place and it only gets worse from there until the ending. And I only spoil it that much because that's the only reason I got through the book. It was one tragedy after another. Every decision made somehow made things worse. And the only way I got through it was because I knew that there would be a light at the end of the tunnel. It's an interesting read. It's a weird book, but it's a good one. It'll make you think at the very least. I wouldn't say it's my very most favoritist novel, but if we went through all the books that I would recommend, we'd be here for another hour. So
yeah.
Well, I've got them on the brain. That one just kind of popped up first thing. Give that a shot. Ask the question again later. We'll see what I come up with.
I am not too much of a book reader. I don't get the chance to read books all that often. But the last one I read was a pretty entertaining novel called Nothing Lasts Forever, which sounds like a James Bond book, but it's not. It's actually the book that... was adapted into Die Hard, the movie.
Oh,
the original
really?
Die Hard, yeah. It's actually a sequel to an earlier book called The Detective, written by Roderick Thorpe, both of those. And it hits on all the same story beats. It's very similar. It's about a man in a skyscraper fighting against terrorists. It's a little more introspective, and you get a lot more of the inner thoughts of the character. And the main character is Joe Leland. He's much, much older than John McClane was in Die Hard, but, it still hits all the same story beats. Even even tying a fire hose around his waist and jumping off the side of the building just to land back inside of it. That's in the book too.
Huh,
it's really cool. It's a pretty good read, so I'd recommend checking that out. That was the last book I read.
Most important thing is, does he say yippee-ki-yay, mother...
Sadly, no.
Well, still worth a read.
Yeah. It's not really an action movie book. It's slightly different. I mean, there's still a lot of action in it, but...
I was going to say,
it doesn't really hit
jumping out a window
it doesn't hit. It doesn't necessarily hit the same sort of character tropes, I suppose. All right. And we got one last question here from @GLSteve2814. They want to know, do you think Mega Man will ever come back And will you continue the epic story?
There are ways Mega Man the comic could come back. I am in no capacity to influence those, unfortunately. But I do know that my work on the book is well known and appreciated by certain people, which is flattering and nice to know. In those avenues, there would be an ability for me to pick up where I left off, jump right back into Mega Man 4 and go from there. And I've got my notes still. I'm ready to go as soon as, you know, I got the green light. But I don't know if it'll be back and in what capacity, because those decisions are made well, well above my head.
Yeah.
So I hope it comes back. I put a lot of heart and soul into that book. Rather proud that I have all 55 issues to my name. And I'm hopeful, but I don't know. And if it were not to continue where it left off, I would, you know, still be game to pick up and do a new direction or a different approach. So, I don't know. I really don't. I wish I did.
I really hope so. I don't know when, I don't know how, but I hope that it manages to come back one day. And that's going to do it for all the Q&A questions this week on the Bumblecast.
Before we wrap up the show, we're going to do our usual shout out to all the patrons who made this show possible this week. First, we welcome S. Yaridovich 9X for joining us. Welcome. Boy, howdy, do you have a name. We have Daniel H., Danielle L., Samuel P., Justin G., Connell T., James K., Patty M., and Alex B. Thank you so much for sticking with us, guys. All your support is greatly appreciated.
You rock.
If you want to follow all my goings on, you can check out BumbleKing.com or my Twitter handle, IanFlynnBKC. That's where I have all my new comic announcements, and I will have more information about the upcoming Heroes Con in June.
And if you want to check out what I'm doing, you can head on over to KNGI.org, where you can find archived episodes of this podcast, as well as many other great shows for you to listen to. If you're into video games, game discussion, video game music, you'll definitely want to check out those shows. You can also find me on Twitter at KyleJCRB.
If you really like what we do and are entertained for an hour, please consider helping us out at patreon.com/bumblecast. Anything from a dollar to more, and you are a part of the team. We also have a number of incentives, including priority Q&A, guest starring on the show, having your own ad space, and if you think of something and want to throw money at us, we'll be willing to listen.
Absolutely. Head on over there and give us your support if you can.
And who was it who did the theme for today's episode, Kyle?
That would be Will Rock, William Harvey. Check out his stuff on Overclocked Remix or at soundcloud.com/WillRock07.
That's going to wrap it up for Bumblecast episode 17. We will see you for episode 18 in 2 weeks. Take care, everybody.
See ya. Hey, thanks for listening to the Bumblecast. If you like the show, be sure to hit that subscribe button and consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some great rewards as well as big plans to make the show even better. Also, rate and review the show on iTunes. It gets more folks listening and really helps us out, so we definitely appreciate it. Original music by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more of his music at bc.s3m.us and find the theme song at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com. Available as a pay what you want download.
Leah's playing Splatoon. Is that coming through at all?
No.
Okay.
Had to listen for a second. No.
Well, I mean, it's not really loud right now, but that's what I'm asking, and we can't really tell because you're not playing yet. Yeah, what are the, what's the thing? Costume party. Why is this even a debate?
What
new
is
Splatfest.
It? What
new
is
Splatfest.
Hmm. What's the themes?
Fancy party versus costume party.
Hmm. I don't know. Stay home. Play Splatoon.
Sounds like an octoling answer to me.
I like that answer, preferably.